Our Dharma talk will be given this evening by senior Dharma teacher and Boundless Way Zen priest, Diane Fitzgerald.
Thank you, Melissa. And thank you, everyone, for being here. It's really like having an open house, and you hope people will come, and you're not sure if anyone will, and so wonderful when the people appear, and just the right people appear. That's how it feels, and to hear the chanting from up here, oh, it's so beautiful. That from it makes such a difference to be here, you know, just hear everyone's voices, and oh, I thought it was like a choir in it, you know, it was amazing. Some of you know, but some of you don't, because we have some new people here tonight. We are giving talks during this Ango on koans, or Zen stories, and we've had a number of people present such beautiful, touching talks. And so tonight, I'm going to give a talk about a Zen story instead of a Zen koan. And this story is something that I heard or read more than 20 years ago. And it has stayed with me all these years. I have no idea why. It's not that complicated. And I have no idea where it is, what it's from. I've tried to find it different places and have never been successful. And it's one of those stories that change over time. I see it in different ways. I become the different characters at different times. And it arose again, this Ango, and suddenly I saw it in an entirely new way. And so I thought I would share it with you. So the story starts out with a monk living in a, maybe like a grass hut, you know, like the grass hut hermitage that we talked about, except this one has a porch on it. And he's living deep in a valley, surrounded by pine-covered mountains and a rushing stream running by his cabin in the mountains with no people around, just eagles flying and the sun shining and the wind blowing. A great hermitage this monk is living in. And there is a seeker. Someone hears about this great Zen master living alone in this valley, and she packs up all her gear and her pots and pans and her climbing gear and goes on a very arduous journey through the mountains covered in black flies, and finally finds herself at the clearing where the monk and the cabin are. And there's the monk standing on the porch, sweeping, just sweep, 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 sweep. And so out she comes into the clearing with all of her, laden with all of her gear, and just full of enthusiasm and determination and having overcome so much to go on this arduous journey all by herself and finally there to find the Zen master and have her questions answered. And the monk standing on the porch with his broom says to her, "I have never had a genuine enlightenment experience." And so the seeker is just dumbfounded. Here she's come all this way. She had a plan. She knew what she was doing with her life. And she comes up to the person who's supposed to have the key to her life, her heart, all that she needs. And what does he say? "I have never had a genuine enlightenment experience." So when I first heard this story, it was at least 20 years ago, if not more, I actually identified with the monk. And I came to Zen after trying out several different things, none of which worked. But I settled on this kind of strange philosophy based on a play, of all things, by Archibald MacLeish called Job. It's kind of similar to the biblical Job, but a little bit of a twist. And so in this play, Job basically decides that it's just hopeless to try to figure anything out. Nothing makes sense, you know. Life, death, meaning, sickness is just beyond comprehension. And so he's just not even going to bother, and he's just going to pay attention to his life and do what he needs to do. So I settled on this as my life philosophy. And, you know, it was kind of a philosophy of despair, but in time I have come to see that at least I did I realized how greatly I was deluded. I realized that I was incapable of understanding these great questions, that my mind was never going to produce an answer. So sometimes when I look back and, you know, think about how shallow I was, I think, well, at least you did have, you know, you realized how deluded you were. For many years of my beginning Zen practice, that actually was my practice. I thought it was about, sitting down and counting my breath and walking in line and, you know, doing all the things I was supposed to do, and that's all there was to it. So in time, I started working with some teachers who very kindly gave me some koans to work on. And every now and then, but that would be sort of an exaggeration. It would be quite often, I would come up against a koan that would totally stymie me. You know, I'd be up against that iron wall and nowhere to turn. But I would turn back to my story here, and I would see the monk sweeping on the porch, and I'd say, you know what? I like that monk, you know? I'd be perfectly happy to just be standing on that porch, sweeping away, and if this is the last koan I'm ever given, this is the one that I take to my grave, great, it's a lovely koan. I can be with this. And so I often, you know, this just monk would appear to me whenever I came up against that wall. And, you know, during this ango, Melissa was giving a talk, and this is the case about Great Master Ma, and the student comes to Great Master Ma and, you know, brings forth the great question, you know, what is the fundamental matter? Why did Bodhidharma come from the West, you know? Why are we born and get old and sick and die? What's the point of it all? And Great Master Ma said, you know, I'm tired today. Go ask one of the senior Dharma teachers. And so then off the student goes to the senior Dharma teacher, and the next one says, you know, I've got a headache. Could you go ask this other senior Dharma teacher? And off he goes to the other one. And the other one goes, you know, I honestly don't know. And suddenly, that monk on that porch just called out to me, and I heard him give the great shout with his, I have never had a genuine enlightenment experience. And it just filled that valley and those mountains and the trees, and everyone heard the great shout as he stood there on the porch and with his broom just sweep, 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 sweep. And then I became the seeker, you know, the one laden down with all of the gear and who was just so dumbfounded and didn't know what to do. It was too late to go back on the trail and had no other plans because this was the plan. And so then she, decides to set up her tent, spend the night, because there's nothing else to do. And so so the story had a little addition to it. And sometime later, we'll call it Kalpas later, along comes another seeker, laden down with such a heavy load, so full of enthusiasm and determination and full of ideas and plans, comes out of that mountain path into the clearing and looks out at the cabin, and there's two monks. Sweep, 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 sweep. Thank you. So now this is when we get to get a little more comfortable, if you like, and have our Dharma dialogue, and feel free to bring up anything that's alive for you right now.
I just want to say that I don't think of life based on JB, given that it is based on the Book of Job, would be shallow at all, because I don't think the Book of Job is shallow at all.
No.
And preaches the same fundamental message. After all of those friends give all of those reasons for all of that suffering, and and Job faces the reality of nature and life, and and that's where the book ends.
I'm being there, you know, with that story of Job and with the play by J.B. And yet. There is something more. There's not despair. Yeah. I mean, there is despair, and there's not. It's one of those tricky things where it's not only despair, I guess is the way to put it, you know? And how lovely to find joy, to find, you know, sweeping on the porch. There you go.
Dry mopping the Zen.
Yeah.
Following you up and down the stairs.
Yeah. We had some workout Kinhin earlier. I was leading.
Aerobic Kinhin. Yeah.
Aerobic Kinhin. Yeah.
And the Roshis, unfortunately, they gave me free rein. You know? Then they reined me in. But it was a very, in that vein, you know, it was fun, you know. It was just, we were going where our feet were taking us, and we were responding to the call, that mysterious call of our heart and our feet and our, you know. And we, you know, so it was quite a thing, you know. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure sweeping the dust from a porch in a small hut is also just as much fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love the image of the seeker with all the pots and pans and all her adventure gear. And I love your painting her not as just a deluded somebody. And of course she was, and we all are, but the genuine sincerity of that, you know, to set off with all those ideas, not a problem that they were the wrong ideas.
Yeah.
But without the ideas and without the gear and without that, she wouldn't have gotten there.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And there she comes, there we come. Mm-hmm. With all of our pots and pans and all of our sense of how it should be and how we'll protect ourselves and all of our story of how it's going to come out,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And how wonderful to show up like that.
Yeah.
You know, we can love and appreciate her.
Mm-hmm. For me, it ties into the topic last night of many flavors of I don't know, and your story, your koan, feels like it brings up both the liberation and the terror. It's like, what is it like to just be naked in I don't know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like... I was feeling into it. How many times have I been there? I got there today. Wait a minute, I had a plan. I thought that this was going to work. Mm-hmm. It's all falling apart. Yeah. Wow, to stay on that edge of that place of how many times do we come to that in daily life?
Mm-hmm.
And then just saying, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And breathe into it instead of run over it. Mm-hmm. Roll over that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, when we can't figure it out anymore.
Yeah.
That's just the best gift. We have to stop.
Mm-hmm. First, I didn't always see it that way in the moment.
Me either.
I like the story very much, and also your telling of it. Which, you know, is kind of melodious and gentle and sort of really expresses the what I would imagine to be the state of mind of the master as he sweeps. And you know, and then the student comes seeking and ends up staying. And this is where I have sort of the story, I would tell it a little different. Because both the student and the master are changed by the relationship that they have for each other. And she remains who she is. In her, who she is different than who he is, and this is, you know, for me is the idea that the being a Zen student or being a priest of it is supposed to look a certain way is somehow like the teacher, like the master, but yet that's not who I am. You know, I'm Ray. I'm a different being than who she is, than who they are. So you know, maybe the we're not trying to be clones. We're really to find an identity of our own.
And you know, that so relates to the koan, you know, with Master Ma, because at the end, remember the ending line is, you know, this one's head is black and this one's head is white. You know, so we both have gray hair, but you know, we're kind of gray hair.
So that, you know, I like to take a lighter side on this and look at it from the poor old monk's perspective. You know, here he is sitting out serenely doing his thing and like, yeah. How rude. You know, he comes up and interrupts his practice. And, yeah. You know, so there it is for him. You know, just as much as it is for her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, maybe there's some disappointment on her part, like, oh, well, is this really the person I want to study with? And for him, you know, did he really want a student? You know, so like, here's life. It's kind of happening. And, you know, I think we tend to, I tend to focus on, you know, when we have those moments of, oh, life really isn't what I thought it was, or this isn't what I thought it was. But there are also times when we're right on, you know, and we're changed then too. You know, like, maybe it's possible that was exactly what she was looking for. Or she got exactly what she needed, you know. I mean, it's... So sometimes I think it's easy to overlook that, you know, sometimes we do set out and we get exactly what we're trying to get. You know, so I think there's different ways of looking at this. It's, you know, for me, it's not always about finding that disappointment, you know. But it's, you know, coming to if it's what we want or not, you know, can we come to terms with that? Can we be with that?
Well, and as I hear the story, she actually did get what she wanted. She really got her heart's desire. She just might have thought it was going to look a little different. But I love that, you know, though we're deluded, there's something true in what we're, where we're going or what we know, that and maybe the hope that our true heart's desire is what we get rather than the mind's desire or something. But yeah, I love that. She really did. It wasn't just about being disappointed. It was about having her heart fulfilled.
This story reminded me of a quote by Henry David Thoreau. It's, happiness is like a butterfly. The more you chase after it, the more it will elude you. But if you turn your attention to other things, it will come and sit softly on your shoulder.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I never heard it before.
You know, probably the seeker was coming for, you know, an answer, you know, maybe a meaning that she wasn't aware of, you know, and all it was the monk's meaning, you know, something we all have access to.
Yeah. I think so many of the koans we've been hearing about are so much about the very ordinary things in life, you know, that we just somehow overlook, you know. So.
When there's also the, you know, the quote from Thoreau about the butterfly that you just is really so much what Dogen talks about, you know, and he says, don't go off after the things of the world, but let the things of the world come to you. It's a very, very counterintuitive direction. And there are all these stories about striving, you know, like this monk coming to the monk, I guess, the seeker coming after the hermit, let's say. Which, of course, also reminds me of Monk Ming going after Wei Nun, you know, going after the robe and bowl was another story that David told earlier in the Ango, thinking that I think the thing that all of this has in common is how easy it is for us to let the mind guide us. And the mind always makes up stories about enlightenment, about awakening, about, you know, in Job, what God has in mind. That we always have to come back to receiving the answer as the answer to the question we didn't know we were asking. Right? Which is kind of what David just said, but it's saying in a different way. You know, the sad thing, I think, in all the stories is that we are so firm in our view of what we think we want or what we think we're supposed to be, And then we discover. The butterfly comes and sits on our shoulder. We can't lift the rope and bowl, and we admit that we came for the Dharma, but we don't even know what that is. And then we can receive it. So the empty hands of receiving.
I love the part of the story too where you're talking about yourself and these, how the monk came to support you in your Zen journey, and the moments you talked about of resignation or acceptance of, well, maybe if I never get any more awakened than this, this is enough. Maybe never pass another koan, maybe not get any smarter, just sweep this porch.
Yeah.
Oh, <no.
laughs> So I never told this story to anyone ever before, so you are the first.
All right.
So thank you for listening.
Let's sit for a few breaths.